Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code DKHOOPS. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code DKHOOPS, only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And we don't just mean the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out, the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
August 11th, 1988, just after 9 in the morning. A late summer Friday, there's nothing unusual to report, unless you're in North Carolina at the Charlotte Coliseum, the brand new home of the NBA's newest franchise, the Charlotte Hornets.
I deeply appreciate the privilege of being here tonight.
Not even 12 hours earlier, the Reverend Billy Graham stood on stage at center court and dedicated the arena.
When I hear somebody say Billy Frank, I know they're from Charlotte.
For years, Charlotte didn't have any professional sports teams, but college hoops was in full force along Tobacco Road. Duke, NC State, Wake, Carolina. So much excitement in the Queen City now to have the NBA come to the region. This new arena will host its first ever sporting event tonight, a doubleheader. Game one, featuring the USA Women's National Team taking on Cuba, and then a team of NBA stars against the men's national team. 24 workers put down a brand new wooden basketball court bearing the Hornets' purple and teal logo. Meanwhile, technicians from the American Sign and Indicator Company make last-minute adjustments to the Jumbotron, suspended above center court. They raise and lower the scoreboard with motorized pulleys. But something goes wrong. The scoreboard tilts. One side smacks the ceiling of the arena. There are screams. People run in all directions. And then the entire Jumbotron, all 40,000 pounds, plummets more than 100 feet onto the hardwood. What is left is a pile of wreckage that resembles a crashed UFO. Nobody was killed or injured, so the powers that be at the Charlotte Coliseum adopt a show must go on stance. The Jumbotron and damaged floor are removed. The hardwood from the old Coliseum, along with the old scoreboard, is trucked to the new building. And that night, miraculously, the games are delayed by just 1/2 hour. Here's a member of that brand new NBA Hornets team, Del Curry. Do you remember the huge scoreboard crashing before the first season? Oh my gosh, what do you remember about that?
We were like, what? What if we were in there? Right? That's what everybody thought. Okay, what if we were in there? Because we were practicing at Grady Cole what do we do now? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Here's another original Hornet, Rex Chapman.
Do you remember when the scoreboard fell before the season?
I rarely think about that, but Hannah, yes. You know, this was a time where that was like that thing that was up there, the scoreboard. Arenas really didn't have those yet. There was might have been speakers up there. So mm-hmm. that was a big, it was massive. And I mean, it just destroyed the floor. They had to reconcrete and all of that stuff. I had always, during warmups, my whole life, I'd shot layups, I'd warmed up, I'd gone out, and then I go out and I stretch at midcourt. And from that moment on, I stretched off to the side just in case the scoreboard fell down. I didn't want to die that way. Yes. So, but purposely, because of the Charlotte Coliseum scoreboard falling down, I moved the location from where I always had stretched.
That's hysterical. For the rest of your career?
For the rest of my career, I would not sit out at midcourt underneath the scoreboard.
For days, the plummeting Jumbotron and the heroic efforts of the arena workers to keep the show moving are the top stories on WCNC-TV, Channel 36, the Charlotte television station where I came from Houston to anchor weekend sports.
Here at Chapel Hill, they're not only constructing a stadium, they're building a football program.
I loved Houston, but longed for a full-time TV gig and kept sending out those tapes and resumes. I was hired in Charlotte as, well, a gimmick by a brand new station determined to try all sorts of crazy ideas to get viewers.
The ultimate sports machine. Jim Zelania and Hannah Storm. Catch them if you can. Only on News 36.
Hiring a woman sports anchor? Now that was something different back in the day. And they let me know they would also prefer me to light my hair to be more blonde than brown. They promoted us on billboards around the area, complete with a race car, alongside my weekday anchor, Jim Zelania.
Hannah Storm in for Jim Zelania tonight with all the sports and real good news about Buddy Baker.
That's right. This afternoon, I had a chance to visit with Buddy Baker in his room at Charlotte Memorial Hospital.
But here's the thing. The main sport we covered, in addition to basketball, was NASCAR, something I frankly knew nothing about. But I've always felt that sports isn't exactly brain surgery or some secret language only known to men. I truly believe, and did then, that with hard work, you can learn anything.
You saw the great driving and the strategy involved in this race.
Charlotte is the epicenter of NASCAR. At the time, legends like Richard Petty and Dale Earnhardt ruled the track. The man in black is still one of the most intimidating athletes that I've ever covered.
Where are you going?
I'm going to the pits. Yep, okay. Out in the sunshine, but I got my hat. I'm ready.
I went to the track almost daily and asked question after question, learning the differences between the brands of tires, the track, the equipment, spending time in the pits, and chasing down drivers who had wrecked. Nothing like sticking your microphone in front of someone who's just lost millions in a crack up that probably wasn't even his fault. So amidst NASCAR and college hoops, how will professional hoops fare in this sports landscape? Well, for the first time since 1980, the NBA is ready to find out, expanding and opening for business in four new cities, Miami, Minneapolis, Orlando, and Charlotte.
Jim, this is great. You know, when the basketball season starts coming around, your blood just pumps a little bit faster. Obviously, this isn't the same kind of Coliseum.
After the Jumbotron fell from the ceiling, some wondered if maybe the team could be cursed. Obviously, I didn't think so. They were too much fun to cover. The fan base was one of the most energetic in pro sports. And the wins and losses aside, there was something special about those first Charlotte Hornets. From the NBA and iHeart podcast, this is NBA DNA with me, Hannah Storm, episode 4, The Long Shots. In 1988 was an exciting time to be in Charlotte. I was 26 and finally a full-time sports TV anchor.
And it's time to go live to the Coliseum now with Hannah Storm. She's with a head coach in the NBA. Hannah?
Hi, Jim. You know, it's great. Del Harris and I, the head coach of the Milwaukee Bucks, were just talking about what a short summer it was.
That's where I first came to know the man who is now the patriarch of the famous Curry family. But back then, he was one of the original Hornets taken in the expansion draft. We've known each other since the Charlotte days.
That's right.
As a lot of people know, you're currently color commentator, but you're also their all-time points and three-point leader for the franchise. So we first met in the late 80s. Do you remember? I don't know. Do you remember me? Obviously, I remember you.
I remember you. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There weren't a lot of women in your position back then. So, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Everybody knows you. Hey, who's that?
At that time, Dell was also 26 and a third-year shooting guard for the Cleveland Cavaliers.
For cutters along the baseline, left corner shot, Curry. Yes, sir. Dell Curry drills it from deep in the left corner. Cleveland continues.
The 1987 NBA draft was different. For starters, there were actually two drafts. First, there was the expansion draft, in which the 23 teams already in the league got to protect eight players from their roster. The Heat and the Hornets, the two expansion teams, got to pick from the unprotected leftovers.
With its first pick in the expansion draft, Charlotte selected Dell Curry from the Cleveland Cavaliers.
It was my third year in the league and third team. I was drafted by Utah, Cleveland, where I played with a lot of guys I already knew, Brad Daugherty, Ron Harper. Didn't play much in Utah. They had a loaded veteran team. Made the playoffs and played well in Cleveland.
Released by Curry.
And the expansion draft, it was between me and Craig Elo, who they were going to protect. And I remember Wayne Embry called me in his office before I left to go back home. He goes, hey, it's between you and Elo. I said, I kind of figured that. He goes, well, we're kind of leaning toward Elo because we think he's got a better opportunity of guarding Jordan.
Oh, my.
Michael.
I went, how okay. Ironic. All right, well, that is so
fair
ironic.
Enough. Yeah. Fair enough, Wayne. I'll see you around because I'm not that guy.
He looks. He gives to Jordan. Jordan to the circle. Puts the shot in the air. Good! The game's over, and the Bulls have won.
Now, you've come off of a playoff team. Now, obviously, the people back here are excited about it, so there's got to be something in the draft. But let's talk about you right now. The fact that you were with Cleveland, finally got to the playoffs, and now you're going to be with an expansion team.
Well, it's a new start for me. I'm going to get, if I'm here, I'm going to get quality time, game in and game out. And I think if I get that, I'll be able to put up some pretty good numbers.
Like everyone else, pro basketball players worry about job security. At any moment, you could get injured, traded, benched, or cut. So the expansion teams offered sort of a fresh start for guys on the back end of their careers, like Kurt Rambis, Ricky Green, and Kelly Trepiuka, who had played at my alma mater, Notre Dame.
And Trepiuka pulls the trigger and hits on his first shot.
Dell was one of the young guys and had just started a young family. His wife, Sonia, had given birth to a little boy named Stefan.
Everybody's looking at me like, man, what are you doing? I'm like, I don't know. I'm a kid myself. But being able to play the game, have the fun, and then be able to bring my sons around when they were old enough to, that was the father's dream, to be able to go in the locker room and hang out.
Did they go to the games when it wasn't like school nights? That's what I did, you know, as my dad. My dad was like, obviously on the business side. But I remember when we didn't have school the next day, my mom would be like, okay, let's go.
Oh, yeah. No games on school nights because we wanted them to, you know, look forward to it and make sure this is a privilege being able to go to the NBA games and then watch your dad play as well. But they enjoyed going to practice just as much as the games. They were very well behaved. We get to practice and they're hanging out in the gym and the practice was starting. We give them a Gatorade and put a ball under their arm and they would sit quietly and watch practice. Like my teammates and coaches couldn't believe it. How do you do that? I was like, well, on the way here is where all the work's done. Like, boys, you come to practice. You can shoot it out, but when practice starts, you get one shot at it. You disrupt practice or become a distraction, you're done. And they understood that. And I always tried to display that it was dad's job. You know, I'm playing a game, but I'm at work right now. You're just able to go to work with me, so don't blow this for us. And they were really good.
A couple weeks after the expansion draft, the NBA then held its traditional draft. Charlotte drew the third pick.
The Charlotte Hornets select Rex Chapman of Kentucky.
A dynamic 6'3 shooting guard who had come out after his sophomore year at the University of Kentucky.
Rex Chapman, just 21 years old, in this coming October.
Rex was so good that Lexington, where he played college ball, had earned the nickname Rexington. He was known campus-wide as King Rex.
I played at Kentucky, and those crowds, very similar to the ones in Charlotte. And, you know, it's 24,000 people in Lexington, and there's 19 or 20 in Charlotte. But the way they loved us was very much the same. I was fortunate that I was good enough to play and be a, you know, be a good player. That wasn't my worry. I didn't have an issue with all of that. It was just, I felt like a kid. Thank God for Muggsy Bogues and Del Curry, who, you know, are still two of my best friends.
Rex was a kid. At the time, he was one of the youngest players in the NBA.
And I felt 12 inside. Everybody on the team was much older than I was, too. And so I'm having to go and do these meetings. You know, like, you worked for who at the time?
I worked for WPCQ, Channel 36.
Okay, so yeah. I'm doing all these, going around. I've got this deal and that deal that I'm doing, you know, endorsements and stuff. And like, your station, I think, asked me to come over. I go over to the station. It's a meeting that you're in. And I'm 19 or 20. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, how does the, I was like, she's really cute thinking about you. And so I thought, though, how does someone my age, she's not done with college, so how someone my age that have this job? And so, because I was like, oh, you know, maybe I'll ask her to go out. After, you know, this is before the internet and all that stuff. A few weeks go by and, you know, I see you all the time. Also, you were one of the first women covering sports and stuff that I think maybe ever that I met Jackie McMullen that year. So the two of you. Mm-hmm. It was just strange that a female was around.
Right.
After a month, I guess, I asked someone who knew how old you were. And they said, she's 25. And I went, she's a woman. That's too old. That's too old. She, and how? You know, you looked my age. And, but when I found, I was so intimidated, I thought, oh no, she's not a girl. She's a woman. Like I that's off limits.
That is hilarious. I am so happy to hear that now. Oh my gosh. And of course, everybody in Charlotte did want to go out with you. You had the nickname Sexy Rexy.
Yeah.
What do you remember about that?
It was just very weird. You know, and I was single, and the Hornets were having me do auctions where I'd be auctioned off and have to go on a date with random people in the community. And again, these could be, you know, 30, 35 year old women. I'm a child. I felt like a kid.
It's a bizarre situation for anyone, especially a guy who found himself as the Hornets franchise player.
We have a very young Rex Chapman coming in. You've pinned some hopes on a very young Tito Horford, both of them with...
You know, I was young. All the friends I knew were still in college. And when I got to Charlotte, I'd never lived a day in my life without a roommate or been at my parents' house. So I got there. And in fact, the first night, I was actually scared to go upstairs because it was dark upstairs. I was a lottery pick. And I'm going to practice the next day. And I started to go upstairs and I went, it's dark up there.
Oh.
And I went down and slept on the couch.
Being expected to be a grown-up when you're not really one yet is difficult. Rex was on a different path from an early age. He was a phenom who devoted his entire life to basketball. His dad, Wayne, was a pro. He played in the ABA. Actually, for two of my dad's former teams, the Indiana Pacers and Kentucky Colonels.
Back on defense, Kentucky. Simpson penetrates, knocked away by Dampier. Will Jones.
I remember being at a few games and thinking to myself, if I could have just had anything in the world, it would be that ball rack. Thinking, man, and I would go over and I'd grab a ball from time to time without my mom knowing, I'd run out there and I'd shoot a basket and I would hear people cheer.
Really?
And from, yeah, and from a very young age, it probably did more damage than good. I fed off of feedback like that, but I always wanted to be a basketball player. Didn't ever want to be anything else. I was very one-dimensional. I also felt like it took everything that I had to be able to play basketball. I think anybody who's trying to be great at something, really great at something, has to sacrifice a little bit of sanity, because you're constantly getting beat and it's to go back day after day and get your ass kicked and yelled at. There's a cognitive dissonance, I think, that has to happen. And I could solve anything on the court that was happening. The rest of life was really hard for me.
Rex did a great job of hiding his feelings. He was famous for his smile, which only helped him become a bigger fan favorite. To hear him tell it today, though, he really needed guidance. And fortunately, he found it.
When I pulled into my subdivision, I hadn't even seen my apartment. Someone set it up. There was furniture in there. And it's very spoiled, I suppose. I pulled up and Dell had his own, he was standing there like two doors down. He, Sonia, and Stefan. He was months old. And Dell had his arm in a cast. He was hurt. He'd broken his wrist. They helped me move all my shit in. And from that day on, I didn't know how to do laundry. Sonia did my laundry. Mm. They took care of me. You know, Dell taught me how to tie a tie. Stuff like
really?
That. Yeah. Aww. So yeah, I felt much like a kid. Tom Tolbert was another rookie, but Tom was 2-3 years older than I was. He graduated from U of A. That was the other thing that was hard, was that was an era where, I mean, most guys were college graduates. And I think I don't know, I felt inferior kind of a bit, intellectually maybe. It, valid or not, that's how I felt. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people didn't come out of school when I was, you know, kind of, unless you were Magic or Isaiah, or you didn't leave school early.
You know, you mentioned Dell. He's such a great person and obviously an incredible father. And you look what his sons have been able to accomplish. But he's been rejected by the Cavs, essentially. He lands here and, you know, along you come, this young kid.
Yeah.
If you could just speak to, I don't know how he took you under under his wing or how he mentored you. Yeah, because you obviously it was essential that you have somebody like that. You weren't going to survive otherwise.
I wasn't. And Dell would have had every reason. He had already played in Utah and Cleveland. And he was, you know, a mid first round pick. So his confidence couldn't be very good. Now they drafted, you know, a two guard in the college draft, me. So we're in, and that wasn't at a time where, yes, we could play together and we did play together some, but that was kind of at a time where, no, you guys are both two guards. And so he helped me so much. Mm. He could have been standoffish. They could have been. Honestly, he's one of my best buddies, but he was like a father figure to me.
So Rex fell in with the Currys and Muggsy Bogues, the team's young point guard. A tiny powerhouse out of Wake Forest.
Bogues pushes it across, finds an opening, it goes!
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code DKHOOPS. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code DKHOOPS, only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, Help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
The Hornets played and lost their first game as an NBA franchise on November 4th, 1988, before a sold-out crowd decked out in tuxedos and ball gowns.
It is the largest arena now in the NBA, 23,500 fans, and gazing around this building, every chair has a fanny in it tonight.
Well, I remember all of us talking, like, they're asking 18,000 people for the men to wear tuxes and the women to wear gowns. What are we doing here? But every person did it. They fell in line.
How has the city of Charlotte been treating the Hornets who have come in here and brought this new team here?
Oh, they're really excited. You know, this is really the most major professional team they have in Charlotte. So everybody's real excited about the franchise.
I wasn't able to play because I broke my wrist the very first practice that we had as the Hornets. So I got to really look around and experience the crowd and soak it all in. Like, these people are really in tuxedos and gowns watching a basketball game, and they are into it.
Rambis with 14 points in the game.
Nice hustle play by Kemp. Big body.
81.
And we're losing wire to wire. We lost by 40 points. And we're all, you know, kind of discouraged as a player. And then we leave, and everybody's still there. No fan had left early, and they give us a standing ovation just for playing. I'm like, okay, this could be okay.
Here's how Rex remembers it.
At the time, we were a little embarrassed by it. Mm-hmm. Because you got to remember, we're going out there, and we're playing. And yes, I know the fans love it and all that. You get judged by winning and losing in our profession. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost like negative feedback because they want us to do so well. We're going to play, be in every game for three and a half quarters until the other team decides to start playing harder and gets all the calls and we lose. Happens 3 out of 4 nights. We felt like the other teams were like, they're getting ready to get smacked in front of all these people.
The fans weren't the only ones dressed to the nines. The Hornets had enlisted famed 80s menswear designer Alexander Julian to fashion their uniforms. And along with his signature bright colors, he added a twist that had never before been seen on an NBA court. A fashion faux pas for the guys who had to wear them.
We thought, okay, we're getting a designer to you know, create our uniforms. And then we see Kelly Shipuka model them in the offseason. We're like, wait, is there pleats in our shorts? What are we doing? What are we doing? And then the scoreboard falls. And we're like, oh, my gosh, what's happening here? Not a lot. I don't think anybody like any player liked those pleats. And whenever we played the team for the first time of the season, they'd walk up and they're like, let me look at your shorts. What?
No.
You guys do that? You have pleats in your shorts.
Yeah. That's so embarrassing.
Yeah. Our colors saved us. Teal and purple colors saved us. I mean, that's the Hornets colors are still some of the hottest colors in the league. And I still have those shorts, Hannah. I have a pair of those shorts.
Oh,
they are
my.
So little and torn and short and tight, but I still have some. I have them somewhere.
Where are they? Do you know where they are?
Yeah, they're in a closet somewhere. I did not frame them and put them in my man cave, but they're in a closet and they're secure.
Must be looking for somebody to give a doing to give to Chapman. Dribble drive. Nicely slammed up. That's a great play. I didn't think that.
I hated those uniforms. I think we all did. And they're sort of iconic uniforms now for whatever reason. The jerseys are anyway. We hated them. We were embarrassed by them. Also, it was a brand new team. In some ways, like I knew the Sixers and the Celtics and the Lakers and what's the Hornets? What are the Heat? What is this? And so in some ways, it almost felt like we weren't part of the NBA.
I remember the Raptors, they were named because it was like Jurassic Park was such a hot thing and kids were into dinosaurs. And so, okay, let's name the team the Raptors and make it a cute dinosaur.
The Timberwolves.
Yeah.
You know, that was that. Right. What are we doing? The Orlando Magic?
I know.
What is this?
I know. The Hornets went 20-62 in their first season. Rex wound up as the team's second leading scorer at 16.9 points per game.
Chapman is guarded by Magic. Dribbles around Magic underneath. Reverse layup. Nice play.
Dell, recovering from that broken wrist, only appeared in 48 games and averaged 17 minutes of playing time. The next season, the record was even worse.
And we were terrible. Like we were
terrible.
We were bad. We won 19 games our first year and maybe 20 the next. But we won attendance records every year. You know, they hung the banners for the attendance in Charlotte.
You know, it's interesting when you start with a team like this, you know you're only going to win probably 25 games maybe. Is that tough getting yourself psyched up for that?
It is, but you have to remember that a franchise isn't going to be made in 1 year. It's going to take 3, 4, 5 years.
How hard is that to accept losing, you know, no matter how hard you try, especially that first season as an expansion team? And who was it that kind of took you under their wing and said, listen, you know, this isn't the end of the world. Let's put it in perspective.
Yeah, I think Ricky Green was the guy for me. I played with him my first year in Utah, and then he comes to Charlotte expansion. And I don't know if accepting losing is a good term, because as any player, you can't accept losing. That's a bad habit, I think, to get into. You have to learn to deal with it, and losing has to keep you inspired to play well and try to end all the losing, as we see teams even in today's NBA struggle to win. But that's the biggest thing. You can't accept losing. If you accept losing, you're not going to be the professional that the fans deserve, that your teammates deserve. Mm-hmm. We were coached very hard by Dick Harter. His expectations of us as a team were a little overboard at times, and he let us know, but he kept us motivated. He kept us thinking that we could win games. But it was just a learning experience, again, how to not accept losing, but how to learn to deal with it and still trying to learn how to be a player at a young age.
What do you learn from a situation like that? I mean, Dell said, you know, he did learn about losing and about surviving that and moving forward. He said as much as he hated it, he did learn something from it. What about you?
No question about it. It's hard being a number one or number two option scorer. I was really probably a two or a three at best. But for stretches in Charlotte, you know, I'm being guarded by Michael and Michael Cooper.
Rex Chapman over Jordan for three, and he got it.
You know, you find out very quickly kind of where you are. Being able to fight through that amidst all the losing, I remember Ricky Green pulled me aside, one of our teammates, older teammates, and I was really down about the losing. And he pulled me aside and said, "Hey, Rex, listen, Dell might have been there too." And he pulled us aside and he was like, "Listen, we're going to get beat 3 out of 4 nights. That's just the way it is. You guys are going to play a long time, but you need to get your shots up. 15 shots a game. You guys get them up no matter what." And as a pro, you know, you're raised, everything is team. And I'm coming from college where, like, you just, like, that's not something that you think about. And it was really good advice.
There were highs, too. On December 23rd, 1988, the Hornets beat the Chicago Bulls 103-101 at the buzzer. It was Michael Jordan's first time playing in Carolina as a pro.
The Hornets win the game at the buzzer. Listen to this crowd.
When Michael came to Charlotte, he was their guy. So they were torn. It was mixed when Michael, because they knew he was a Carolina guy, wanted to play well, but this is our team. The Hornets is our team. Who do we cheer for? But it was always fun to compete against Michael because he wanted to put on a good show for the fans of Charlotte.
I do remember him because they're, again, I was like the only woman, I think, in the locker room. And I remember being kind of terrified going in. I didn't really like going in the locker room. And I remember going in to interview Michael Jordan and he called me ma'am. And I was like so young, but you know, it was like a Southern thing, you know, that nice, like those nice manners. And he was like, I don't know, he was so respectful. And I do think a lot of times, even, you know, before winning those championships and things, he kind of set the tone. I think a lot of guys looked at him and said, you know what, this is how we should behave.
Oh, absolutely. And I remember Scott Burrell. I played with him in Charlotte, and he got traded to Chicago. Summers, he'd come back to Charlotte, and he'd talk about how different it is playing with Michael in Chicago and the way he demands every player be ready to play, give their best. It took its toll on Scotty Burrell. I remember him telling me, man, it's tough playing with that guy. And you see why. I mean, he was so competitive. He wants to win, and he knows he needs help. He wants these guys to be held accountable.
Jordan works his way around the top of the key, left of the lane, inside, up with the left-hander, scores.
Did you have any idea in those early years sort of what he would become and what the Bulls would become?
Oh, I knew what he would become in college. I remember the 84 Olympic trials. Bobby Knight was the coach. I was invited to that trial, and that was some of the best practices I've ever been involved in of my life. That team was unbelievable. And Michael stood up head and shoulders above everybody, so We all knew before he got to the league that he was going to be that type of player, and he's still the best player to play the game in my book.
The look away to Livingston. Jordan. Oh! A spectacular move by Michael Jordan! That's 13!
I'd played against Michael in the summer after being drafted, and until that point, I'd never really been on the court with someone that I kind of had to admit was better than I was. His hands are so big. I mean, so big. And when you can, if a ball comes off the rim and it's going out of bounds and 10 guys are going for it, 9 guys are going for it to grab it with 2 hands as it goes toward the corner.
Outside Jake's ball tipped away by Jordan. It's loose to 3.
When you have hands so big that you can reach out with one hand and grab that ball and grab it and be gone, you're playing a different game. If he got 2 feet in the paint, he's dunking it. He was just different. And, you know, it was fun.
Pippen gets it to Jordan. Michael challenges and slams. And look at me.
It was fun playing him. So it wasn't frustrating, it wasn't intimidating, it was just, you love the challenge?
Loved it, and you don't, like, you can get him. You know, there are times you get him, he gets you, and he got me more than I got him, but I was hurt a lot, and there were games when I would miss playing against him that just drove me insane. And you got to remember, at the time, he's not the greatest player in the world.
He was on his way.
Yeah, and that's at the time when I came in, couldn't really shoot yet. So for 2 or 3 years, I just backed off of him. We all didn't really matter because he was so crazy athletic and bouncy and quick and competitive. Mm-hmm. Once he got where he could shoot it, it was a wrap.
Jordan again from 3-point land.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code DKHOOPS. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code DKHOOPS, only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
MJ would eventually own the Charlotte Hornets. But when I was in Charlotte, they were owned by George Shinn, whose life outside of basketball sometimes overshadowed the team. In 1999, he moved the franchise from Charlotte to New Orleans after he was accused of sexual assault. His trial was broadcast nationally on Court TV. Basketball returned to Charlotte in 2004 in the form of the Charlotte Bobcats, making media mogul and billionaire Robert Johnson the first African-American to own a major sports franchise. In 2010, that team was acquired by Michael Jordan, who owned the franchise for many years, changing the name back to the Hornets. Obviously, you've been with the franchise for those years. You know, what was that like?
I mean, it was great having him around. The players loved it. He's still going to court, you know, back when he's playing a little one-on-one, shoot, motivate. It was fun having him around. But it just goes to show you that as good a player as he was, it's so hard to win in this league as an owner or an executive. You're not on the floor. You have no say about how teams play or what you want to happen. And that was, I know that was frustrating for everybody, especially him, you know, as competitive as he was. But it was great having him around, especially owning that team in the state where he was born.
I read this quote from you in the Charlotte Observer, and you said, "I was very fortunate to join the Hornets, although I wasn't so sure at the time." You know, in retrospect, why was that a good thing that happened to you going in that expansion draft?
I got to really kind of carve out a career. I knew we were all guys that, again, trying to find our way in the NBA, or guys, you know, finding their way out. So a lot of us were in the same boat, talking Rex, Muggsy, myself. We're all still good friends, and we were in it together. We're trying to figure out how are we going to make a career out of this together.
It took 4 years for the Hornets to emerge from the basement of the Eastern Conference and make an appearance in the playoffs, led by the likes of Larry Johnson and Alonzo Mourning.
Here's Mourning, first attempt inside of O'Neal, the basketball foul, and Shaq gets the foul.
The first playoff series that you guys win against the Boston Celtics, Alonzo Mourning with a buzzer beater.
Charlotte out of timeout. Here's Mourning, the shot, gone! Game over! It's
What do you think it was that set that team apart that allowed you guys to finally achieve postseason success?
I think our chemistry. We got along so well on and off the floor. That won us a lot of games on the floor because we knew each other. We policed ourselves in the locker room with Larry, Alonzo, myself, Muggsy. Our coach didn't have to, I mean, he just coached X's and O's. We coached ourselves in the locker room, guys being on time, guys being ready to play. That was the fun of it. We all respected each other. We all brought different areas of expertise as far as leadership, and we all respected and we played for each other.
Robert Reed slides through, outside Curry, open shot right of the key is in. Del Curry, what, 3 for 4?
We thought we were right there. We had a good group of young, experienced, playing the Celtics, getting that win. We were like, oh, we're right there. We got to keep this team together. And we still talk about that team could have done something. We could have made a difference.
Rex was gone by then. Traded away to the Washington Bullets for Tim Hammond the year before Charlotte's playoff run.
Off it comes to Chapman, almost overthrown. Chapman, long shot up.
He would have his own journey, which we will dig into in the next episode. Dell stayed in Charlotte for a long time, eventually becoming one of the best sixth men in the NBA.
Here's Curry with a bang shot. Heck with the jump shots, Dell, just working close.
The Hornets I covered coped incredibly well with the adversity of losing night after night. They weren't at each other's throats, and off the court, they developed enduring bonds.
Muggsy, Dell, and I were eating breakfast in Los Angeles. Dell's dad was 58 years old at the time, and, you know, he came to a lot of our games, and they talked before every single game. Every game. And this is like before cell phones and stuff were right around that time. And we were with Dell in Los Angeles. We just had shoot around, I think, and Dell, we're in his room, and Dell got a phone call, and his dad had died. And he was destroyed. We were destroyed. This is his best friend, you know. And I think us being young and things like those things happening just sort of bonded us forever. I could call that dude with anything right now and he would pick up. He knows he could do the same with me. Muggsy the same. Those teams and some of the people on those teams that I still have relationships with, you know, 30 years later, 35 years later. I'm so grateful, so thankful.
Meanwhile, back in the subdivision, Rex didn't realize it, but he was babysitting the future of basketball.
Curry again, and Curry hits a three!
He's really the first little baby I'd been around. I'd been around little kids, but then I remember coming back the summer after the first year, and he's talking, he's calling Dell daddy. And I thought, this is hilarious. I've got a friend who has a kid that calls him daddy. Daddy is what I call Dell in my phone. It's what I call him to this day because of that. What's fun about Stephen is every time I see him at a ball game or wherever it is, the very first moment is a little smile, kind of a, and I don't even know what we're smiling about. It's probably me playing little games with him when he was a kid. Those are kind of hardwired memories. I remember being in the car coming home, like an exhibition game in Greenville, South Carolina. And we drove to the game, me, Dell, Muggsy, and Stephen. And I've said before, you know, I'm sure at the time we thought we were big shit basketball players, and the best player in the car was in a baby seat the whole time.
So true.
Green got a hand on it, a turnover, up ahead, Curry, make it 9.
And Stephen was just crying, and Dell finally was like, take him out of there, see, you know, if you can get him. I put him on my chest, he went out like that, and I just remember feeling his heartbeat on mine, and close to that moment, I was like, oh, I've got to be a dad someday.
Warriors can add to their lead now. Curry left wide, open, right between the eyes, and they love it on the bench. High screen comes, Curry. Some ball handling, fires up a three, does it again!
I want to touch on the three-pointer because we've talked about that a lot in this series. How do you think it evolved as a weapon in the NBA to what it is today?
You know, my play-by-play guy, Eric Collins, he's the biggest trivia basketball guy I've ever seen. I'll get to the game tonight and he'll have some trivia about the back in, you know, 1993 or 94, 95, on this day, the Hornets did this. And Dell, how many threes do you think you shot? I'll say a number. He'll go, nope, you were 1 for 2. You were 1 for 3. You were 1 for 4. I'm like, what?
That can't be.
You guys shot 10 as a team, and you took 3 of them. And I was like, what? He's like, yeah, how far have we come with the NBA three-point shot now? And Steph, I'll tell everybody, it's Steph's fault. It's my fault for teaching him how to shoot. It's his fault for changing her and ruining the game with the three-point shot. But, you know, I actually love the way the game is played now with the threes and the so much emphasis on scoring. You know, everything changes for a reason, for good. Maybe one player. I know Michael changed the game. Larry Bird and Magic changed it before that. You know, Steph has changed it to where the NBA is today. And I think it's good.
Del Curry, you're going to be calling a game where both of your sons are going to be playing against each other. This is going to be for the first time in NBA history that a father will call the game for both of his sons like this.
It's a parent's dream come true. Where else would you rather be than in the booth calling a game? It's like I'm in the kitchen there in the backyard. I'm watching them play, watching them fight, watching them foul each other. I'll go out, settle it, go back in, and let them finish the game.
When I go to games in the Hornets, I still see our old Dr. Perry, who is a team physician, and we still have some greeters who work in the new arena that was at the old Coliseum, and they just smile because they saw Steph and Seth when they were little boys back in the family room shooting wads up paper in the trash can and getting in people's way in the locker room and the training room.
And there they are. They flip a coin on who's going to wear the Golden State jersey, who's going to wear the Portland jersey. Suns have played 24 playoff games during this run. They've been in person to 21 of the 24. Seth Curry against Steph Curry. Rodney Hood drills the three at the buzzer.
But they were part of the family. They knew they were Dell's kids. They loved the game. So it's good to see all those people, you know, think back. I remember when he was this high, and now he's able to play. But it's great being a father and a fan. It started in college for me when they were at college at Davidson and Duke.
Wide open look. Yeah, Curry's there for a reason, isn't he? Curry.
I didn't have to coach anymore. I could sit back and be a father and a fan and enjoy the game.
And another clean look. Seth Curry wide open on the wing.
I mean, you can't put into words how proud I am to know how hard it is to get to the NBA and then have two sons follow in your footsteps and be the players, be better than their old man was.
Next time on NBA DNA, Rex Chapman talks about his game, his addiction, and his remarkable recovery. NBA DNA with Hannah Storm is a production of iHeart Podcasts, the NBA, and Brainstormin' Productions. The show is written and executive produced by me, Hannah Storm, along with Julia Weaver and Alex French. Our lead producer and showrunner is Julia Weaver. Our senior producers are Peter Cowder, Alex French, and Brandon Reese. Editing and sound design by Kirk Guerin and Julia Weaver. The show's executive producers are Carmen Belmont, Jason English, Sean Titone, Steve Weintraub, and Jason Weichelt.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.